And good morning. It's Tuesday, April 28th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Cellier in Tel Aviv. The Strait of Hormuz remains closed. The US is refusing any deal with Iran that doesn't deal with its nuclear program, and oil prices are rising for a seventh straight day. The question now, who blinks first? Today's guest is skeptical of President Trump's approach, a strong defender of Israel. Andrew Fox is a former British Army officer and a senior fellow at the Henry Jackson Society. Hear our conversation in a moment. If you enjoy these updates, you can sign up using the link below. It only takes a moment. And if you'd like to sponsor Israel in 10, do contact us at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now the headlines. No nuclear, no deal. President Trump has reportedly rejected Iran's proposal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and end the war, with nuclear talks pushed off for later. As oil prices climb, Bloomberg reports that the US naval blockade is preventing Iran from exporting its oil. Tehran now has just 22 days of storage remaining, a situation that could force a sharp cut in production. Shipping through the strait has ground to a halt, with around 20,000 seafarers stranded on dozens of vessels. Inside Iran, pressure is building. The regime is increasingly concerned that soaring prices and high unemployment could trigger a new wave of unrest. The currency is in free fall, trading near 1.6 million rial to the dollar on the unofficial market, while basic food prices have soared by as much as seven times in some areas. According to Iran International, the Supreme National Security Council has met to assess the risk, with particular concern over damage to key petrochemical and steel industries during the war. In the north, two IDF soldiers were wounded, one of them seriously, in a Hezbollah drone attack during operations in southern Lebanon. The government now describes Hezbollah's expanding UAV force as a major threat, with troops facing increasingly sophisticated attacks. The IDF says it has destroyed more than 1,000 Hezbollah targets within the 10-kilometer buffer zone. Fighting continues, even as diplomatic efforts between Jerusalem and Beirut remain underway. A new report in the Wall Street Journal raises serious questions about Qatar's ties to the International Criminal Court prosecutor Karim Khan. The report alleges Qatar may have offered to look after Khan if he pursued arrest warrants against Israeli leaders. The claims, based on a witness statement and audio recordings, come as Khan faces disciplinary proceedings over separate misconduct allegations. Last year, The Guardian reported that a Qatar-linked firm investigated the woman accusing him, and it's all adding to growing scrutiny of the ICC's handling of its case against Israel. Well, as Hezbollah drone attacks become more advanced, including fiber optic systems that can bypass electronic jamming, pressure is mounting on Israel's defense industry to respond. Rafael CEO Yoav Turgeman says the answer lies in next-generation systems like the Iron Beam laser, which is now being integrated into Israel's air defences. But he cautions it's not a magic solution, but part of a broader race against rapidly evolving Iranian-backed technology. Rafael is pushing for partial privatisation to accelerate innovation, a sign of how battlefield threats are reshaping Israel's defence strategy in real time. Before we get to today's conversation, a quick thank you to our sponsors. Susie and Kerry Fredman made today's episode possible. Now, here's Andrew Fox. Andrew, it is no secret that you are skeptical about President Trump's approach to Iran. What is he doing wrong?
Well, look, I think it's simply that there's been a strategic error made, and now it's what happens when you develop that strategy to pull off a regain. And so we've got the blockade, and it seems to me there's two clocks here. There's two clocks running simultaneously. Mr. Trump is calculating that economic pressure will force the regime to the negotiating table. I think ideally he'd like it to collapse, but I don't think that happens quickly. You don't generally get regime change on demand. But the question is, does the pressure to negotiate with the Iranian regime beat the pressure that's coming at the gas pump in America with midterms on the horizon? I think we can take a rounder view as well and say, if we get to the end state where there's a negotiation, where in exchange for some sanctions relief, Iran hands over all its highly enriched uranium and then is left with a heavily degraded missile stocks and missile capability, and we buy 5, 10, maybe even 20 years of time from a nuclear Iran, then that's no bad thing. The key thing for me is how we fix that initial mistake and get to an end state where we can look at it and say this is a reasonably decent outcome.
On the blockade, you say it's not working, but Bloomberg is out today saying that Iran cannot export its oil and they're under real pressure now.
Yeah, very, very possibly so. And but that doesn't mean the regime's going to collapse, and it doesn't mean it's going to force them to the table. You know, I think we have to stop looking at Iran as rational actors in the way that we would understand it. They're rational actors in the way that they would understand it, which is that suffering is a religious duty. It's part of this journey they believe they're on to have the Mahdi return and then establish the global caliphate. I do think it raises the chances of them coming to the table and making a sensible concession, but it doesn't guarantee it.
I know you're unhappy with the way the president has treated America's NATO allies. Would you like to have seen more coordination with NATO?
I think that would have been a very sensible thing to do. If you can bring people on that journey with you, that's just good leadership. That's what we teach at the Royal Military Academy. The art of leadership is persuading people to come on that journey with you, even when they don't really want to. So that would have been a really good leadership move by Trump, and it would have ameliorated a lot of the tension and friction that we're seeing that has had an actual operational effect on the ground, in terms of things like Hormuz. In terms of things like the Americans having to bus in a third carrier group later in the war because they didn't have enough kit in theater when they started operations. You know, there are lots of things that could have gone better in this war if they'd had NATO allies alongside them in doing so.
Let's talk about Lebanon and Hezbollah. I believe you've been into Lebanon a few times with the IDF. These Hezbollah attacks are becoming more sophisticated. Can this war ever be won?
Well, look, I think win and lose is not a helpful framing. It's the same with Iran, and I think it's particularly useful. I think what we have to look is in terms of if we set ourselves a strategic goal, did we achieve it or not? Because you are not going to wipe Hezbollah off the battlefield. You're not going to have one decisive battle with Hezbollah where they suddenly wave the white flag and surrender, and then we go on and have peace negotiations. That's not how this works with these kind of groups. The bottom line is, can Israel keep its northern borders safe? And that's the real challenge here. And I think if we break this down into three factors, intent, opportunity, and capability, Hezbollah will always have the intent to attack Israel. Therefore, how do you deny them the opportunity? Well, at the moment, it looks like making that buffer zone south of the Litani. It wasn't properly enforced by UNIFIL, so Israel is stepping in to do that job and clear that zone of any Hezbollah architecture, infrastructure, and weapons caches, which makes perfect logical sense. Now, the capability is the most worrying factor here. So we've seen this evolution from ground forces to rocket attacks and now potentially to drones, including FPV or wire-guided drones. That's concerning because it's a new evolution and it always takes a bit of a time lag to respond to a new evolution. And we saw just in this last week Hezbollah FPV, first-person view drones, attacking IDF forces in the fields. Now, we saw in Ukraine how hard those drones are to stop. The IDF does have good capability. The question is whether it's rolled out to IDF frontline troops yet. So that's the current evolution I'm watching on the battlefield is what happens with these drones. Do they escalate in number and scale? Or is this still just going to be a one-off occasional thing? And I'm guessing that's something that Kiryar will be tracking very closely as well.
Andrew, you are a passionate defender of Israel. You have been for a very long time. The smears just get more outlandish. The latest talking about the IDF using dogs to rape Palestinian prisoners. How do you even engage with that level of lunacy?
I think that's a lucky one. That's one that's so stupid you can just laugh it off and just let the far left screech away about nonsense. That's an easy one to rebut. The much harder stuff is... frankly, the own goals that Israel puts across to us, things like the Christian statue, things like the solar panels, you know, that's what really makes life difficult is those self-inflicted wounds. But when it comes to the wider influence, information, this is a triumph of 2.5 years of Iranian-driven, Russian-driven, Pakistani bot-driven Hamas propaganda. I've been arguing for 2.5 years that this is creating a really toxic atmosphere for people when you try and stand up and fight Israel's corner. You just have to stick to what you believe to be true and hope that at some point the truth will out. And the best example I'll give you is the Hamas casualty stats paper that I wrote back in December 2024, where lots of people screamed at me at the time about it. And it's all coming out now. So 3 months after I wrote it, saying there were loads of errors, Hamas deleted thousands of names from their list. I also said at the time that Hamas always released their casualty deaths after the war. We're now starting to see this drumbeat of fighter obituaries being released by Hamas and their allied groups in Gaza. I suspect in time, my prediction that the IDF's estimates of numbers of fighters killed will be about right.
Is life becoming unsustainable for Jews in the UK?
I can't speak for the Jewish community, but I can repeat what they say to me. And that is, they do find it a struggle right now. You know, they are under attack. I mean, I think it's escalated since the start of the Iran war. I think it's very clear that the Iranians are paying sympathisers in the UK to escalate their attacks on the Jewish community. The key solution here is that our government needs to get a grip. And unfortunately, we've had 2 years of them appeasing these people on the marches. We've, you know, the pro-Palestine marches, we've seen time after time after time anti-Semitic slogans being chanted. You know, we need to start getting serious about this, because otherwise it is going to become unsustainable.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Be sure to sign up and get these updates daily. Goodbye.